This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for February 5th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, the president will sign the newly passed Farm Bill on Friday. We'll look at some of the specifics of the commodity title. And this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at soybean consumption in China with agricultural economist Daryl Good. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter wheat, the May variety, 641 and a quarter, up 3 3/4. July, 633, up 2 1/2. Soft May wheat, 589 and a quarter, up 2 1/2. July, 593 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. March corn, 443 1/2, up 1 3/4. July, 452 1/4, down 1/2. December, 457, down 2 1/4. March soybeans, 13.16 1/4, up 3. July, 12.80 3/4, up 1 1/4. November, 11.12 1/2, up 2. March soybean meal, 4.42 even, down $5 after rallying today as high as 4.48.80. March soybean oil, 38.10, up 39. February live cattle. These are last trades now, 139.65, up 5 cents. March feeder cattle, 167.02 1/2, also up 5 cents. And February lean hogs, 86.45, up 122 1/2. And those are your last trades and settlements from Chicago Board of Trade.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says Argentina's rain potentials remain the same as yesterday, with areas from Uruguay to far northeastern Buenos Aires to northern Cordoba and southern Santiago del Estero greatest. Rain totals for the coming week will vary from 2 to 5 inches, with some potential for localized amounts getting up to more than 7 inches. Net drying, meanwhile, is likely in a large part of Brazil during the coming week to 10 days, with the few showers that occur each day north of central Rio Grande do Sul failing to counter evaporation. Temperatures will be seasonably warm in Brazil during the coming week, with daily highs in the upper 80s and 90s, and that will be more than sufficient to maintain a steady rate of drying. Northern Argentina will see some very warm to hot temperatures for a while this week, with frequent highs in the 90s, and some extremes pushing over 100 on the drier weather days.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group. She is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Understand you were over at Peoria today with a group of producers?
Yes, they had the Illinois Pork Producers Expo, and we did a market panel talking about all the different, everything from grains and, of course, inputs, meal, all the way through to hogs, cattle, you name it, we talked about it pretty much.
I imagine PED was probably at the forefront of some of their minds.
Oh, my Lord, yes. You know, I mean, we finally have a situation here where when you look at the futures prices on hogs, we, of course, have opportunities to lock in some very good profits. But the big question is, you know, we don't know as we go down the road here with PEDV whether or not we'll have animals available, you know, for future months. You know, for right now, we know that it's going to be short. We've had losses. Fortunately, it's not everywhere and it's not on every farm, and we hope that it stays that way. But that was certainly a hot topic.
Was that a driving force to today's $1.22.5 gain?
Well, I certainly think so. You know, when you look at the bigger picture, we saw that it actually mutated. In other words, you know, it's changed into a different virus than the original virus that we saw that was discovered in April of 2013. So that's very concerning. They don't really know for sure how it spread, and so they're just working hard to try and figure out what they can do. And, you know, nobody knows if when we get into the spring, if it may just plain disappear.
All right. We have a bunch of numbers to work our way through, fundamentals, some from Stats Canada and some trade estimates for Monday's WASDE report. Let's begin with the Stats Canada number. What did we get there?
Well, you know, the interesting part in the Stats Canada numbers, I didn't think that there was anything that was very, very surprising or very interesting there. All of that had already been talked about and in the market. And, you know, yesterday's trade made that very obvious. We didn't see any big push down like we saw in wheat. In fact, wheat managed to come back in the beginning. And we saw follow-through gains today. So, you know, I think it provided a confirmation of what we already knew, that we had large crops and much larger crops up there than we've had years before. But at the same time, I'm glad it's behind us, and it was really positive to see the market actually not react in a negative way.
In fact, wheat has rallied in recent days, and for those of us who have been looking for a bottom in the wheat market to help fuel the corn engine, is this the time? Is this the place?
Well, you know, it's a little bit early to confirm necessarily a bottom. We know that what we have going on at the moment, Dave, is a lot of short covering. And knowing that the traditional funds basically have been record short in wheat, we could see some follow through. But it certainly is giving buyers a little more confidence, and it's also making, you know, shorts nervous that this might not be the case. I think coupled with the fact that, you know, the winter wheat didn't fare very well. We've had some reports out that said, you know, this winter has been brutal on wheat. All of that is adding to the fire.
We also had trade numbers out for next Monday's WASDE report. And I guess I want to start with the South American numbers first. Here's what the trade thinks about production down in South America. Average trade guess for corn, and these are in millions of metric tons, in Argentina, 23.82, and in Brazil, 69.99. And then the average trade guesses for soybeans, Argentina 54.13, and then in Brazil 89.76. What do you make of the numbers?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at the corn numbers, of course, the expectation is that we will see less corn produced down there. And I don't think that that's a big surprise. If you look at the bean numbers, I'd say the Brazilian number looks pretty, I mean, the Argentinian number looks pretty good. The Brazilian number on the other side still looks rather low, and yet we do know that, you know, eastern and southern Brazil have had a brutal heat period throughout the month of January, setting a record for January, you know, having the humidity actually drop down to 15%, which is very, you know, it's not even safe for human beings, much less plants. And so I think that the trade will accept this. We've already had plenty of privates out there that have said 91.3 or 90. So if we come in at 89.7, I would expect it to be, somewhat supportive to the marketplace, even though it's a higher number than the USDA had prior. It's a number that isn't as high as we might have expected it to go.
Yeah, because the attaché down there is already batting around numbers higher than 90.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we've heard as high as 91.3. And I think that, the big thing now is with this extreme heat that they've been having in some areas, your later season beans could come under some real, you could see real losses. And, when you talk about real losses down there, those are big numbers. You could talk about maybe 3 to 5 million metric tons.
Turn our attention then to ending stocks and trade guesses for the 13-14 crop. Average trade on wheat, 603. These are in millions of bushels. That's 603,000 for corn, 1.619 and 143 million. Then on the soybeans, 603 million on the wheat and 143 on the beans. I saw numbers yesterday from Bloomberg that are very close, so the trade is in a very, very narrow range thinking about the report on Monday.
Oh, there's no question about that, Dave. I think, what you're seeing is, at 1.603 for a carryout, that's 25 million bushels or 28 million bushels lower than we were last month. And not really a big surprise, primarily because of the fact that we have some strong export demand. I think the trade itself is expecting to see the USDA up corn exports, probably by 25 to 50 million bushels. On beans, going down from 150 to 143, I think none of us, when we're making these guesses, we're all looking at this and saying, what will the USDA do? The reality is, with the export numbers that we've seen, a real number is probably lower than this, but, it's not a wise thing to do. We have to be a reliable supporter or a supplier, whether we want to or not. And so I think 143 fits right in with the continued demand for beans. Wheat, 603, I personally think it could be a little bit higher than that, but, it's a circumstance where the wheat feed demand hasn't been there as much. Now we'll find out if they're going to do anything on exports on the wheat side, too. We do know that there's been more interest coming out of China in that particular area, out of a few other countries, and so I think that the report could be a very dull report if it comes right in with the numbers that we're talking about. And then we'll just go right on to starting to trade the ag forum numbers from later in the month.
All right. Thank you very much, Jackie. You have a grand day.
You too. Thanks, Dave.
That's Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is out of Champaign, Illinois. She joins us every Wednesday afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In agricultural news, the Senate has passed the final version of the Farm Bill in a 68-32 vote, sending the legislation to President Barack Obama to sign. For crop farmers, the bill boosts insurance options and makes more adjustments to stress risk management by beefing up the crop insurance programs and giving producers an option to choose a main commodity safety net that likely will depend on regional commodity choices. The Farm Bill eliminates direct payments for all producers except cotton farmers. Upland cotton farmers will collect transitional direct payments for 2014 and possibly 2015, while USDA creates the stacked income protection crop insurance that will be exclusively for cotton producers. Farmers are going to have to get acquainted quickly with the ins and outs of the agriculture risk coverage, the price loss coverage, and supplemental coverage options, and the way SCL will interact with PLC. Farmers will have to make a one-time, irrevocable decision to enroll a particular commodity in ARC or PLC. If a farmer chooses ARC for individual coverage, then all commodities are enrolled in that program. Unlike previous farm bills, There are no payment caps on individual programs. Instead, farmers will have a $125,000 cap on all commodity programs together, whether that is ARC, PLC, market loan gains, or loan deficiency payments. The payment cap doubles to $250,000 for married couples. The supplemental coverage option is an added insurance policy that farmers can buy if they enroll in price loss coverage. It will cover losses exceeding 14%, meaning that it will cover losses below 86% of revenue. SCO will cover that gap between 86% of revenue and when individual insurance coverage kicks in. Farmers will get to choose whether the additional coverage is based on individual yield and losses or county yield and loss. SCO will be available in 2015 for farmers who enroll in price loss coverage. Farmers who enroll in ARC are not eligible to buy SCO. Farmers who buy SCO would pay 35% of the actual premium cost, and USDA would subsidize the other 65%. SCO is an insurance policy, so it does not have a payment cap. President Obama will travel to East Lansing, Michigan on Friday to sign the Farm Bill after delivering remarks at Michigan State University on the importance of the bill to America's economy. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Soybeans are leaving the country at a blistering pace. The export market for the oil seed ramped up last fall and is not showing signs of slowing down. However, as you'll hear from Todd Gleason, something will need to curb China's appetite for U.S. soybeans soon.
The consumption of U.S. soybeans is on track to exceed the available supply. That's the conclusion of University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. He says USDA's projected domestic crush of 1.7 billion bushels may be too small, and so might its export figure.
The USDA projection of marketing year exports is 13% larger than last year's exports. Through the first 21 weeks of the year, export inspections were 17% larger than those of last year. That pace, then, is higher than the pace implied by the USDA's projection.
This all adds up to more consumption than might be possible given the number of bushels available. However, there are some caveats.
The magnitude of unshipped sales is also much larger than that of last year. As of January 16th, those outstanding sales stood at 514 million bushels compared to only 307 million at the same time last year. These total export commitments, that is, shipments plus outstanding sales, stood at 1.55 billion bushels, 54 million more than USDA's projection for the entire year. If exports for the current year actually reach 1.55 billion bushels, year-ending stocks would be less than 100 million bushels, or less than 3% of projected consumption.
Good says stocks, realistically, cannot be reduced to such a low level. A more likely minimum is about 125 million bushels. So to clarify, the current pace of domestic use, or the crush, plus the current export pace, that's not sustainable. Also, unshipped cargoes of soybeans are greater this year than last. Good thinks those items all add up to this conclusion.
Exporters appear to be selling soybeans that will not be available.
Well, how does the discrepancy get fixed? Well, there are several options. The crush can slow down. Export sales on the books already can be canceled. Some of the sales could be rolled forward into the next marketing year. More soybeans could be imported from South America this summer. Or USDA could lower the ending stocks figure. Each of these pathways holds a market move higher and a market move lower. It isn't clear yet which will be the case, says Darrell Good.
For now, prices appear locked into a broad, sideways pattern until the likely pathway becomes more obvious. For producers still holding old crop soybeans, the higher price pathway would be welcome, but holds the most risk since a large U.S. crop in 2014 is expected to eventually lead to lower prices. Protecting the downside price risk on old crop soybeans still seems prudent.
Those wanting to read more from Daryl Good on the price of soybeans can find his articles online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the markets is Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it's been a very choppy affair in some ways this market today, and I got to think that part of the strength that we've been seeing in recent days is because cash movement has probably been a little bit hard to come by.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been the case with all this crazy weather we've been having, Dave. And we did see yesterday, I think, with the rally that we saw, we did see quite a bit of corn move. I mean, if you listen to some of the elevators, what they're saying, and talking with Roy up there in Chicago that, you know, does a lot of hedging for some elevators, there was quite a bit of cash movement yesterday and maybe a little bit of weakness showing in the basis levels, but not a lot.
So the question is, was there enough cash movement to fill pipeline to the degree that basis will rally equal with futures going forward for the next several days?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, of course, two steps here. One is you got to get a bump from the farmer, and it looks like a lot of the cash buyers, you know, turn around and hedge that, and that's why we saw a little bit weaker market today. But then your second step is you got to get delivered a lot of times, too.
Mm.
So that may be, you know, that may be the harder part of those two parts this time.
Well, let's look at the future part then separately. In the corn, it has been a constructive week, especially if you're a little bit bullish in this time window. Can you see corn going for 450 in the March contract?
Yeah, I think that's the key word, Dave, is a little bit bullish. I think that's certainly in the cards here with the move that we've had. I think that, again, as you hit these levels, I mean, they're pretty well-published targets, like 450 on the March corn, 460 on the December corn. I think those levels do get sold. And, you know, what happens then is, you know, maybe you get everybody gets the stuff sold they want to sell there, and then maybe you got a chance to move a little bit higher. But I think that's going to be pretty tough resistance.
Thank you much, Bill.
Thank you, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. National Chocolate Fondue Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1840, Sir Hiram Maxim was born, an American inventor. He filed hundreds of patents in the U.S. and Great Britain for a wide range of products, including mousetraps, steam power water pumps, vacuum pumps, and gas motors. In 1815, Gail Borden was issued a patent for a baked combination of extracts from meat with flour. The so-called meat biscuit became a staple of the military. He also perfected a process to heat milk in a vacuum to produce condensed milk. Borden's today is one of the biggest dairy product companies in the world. In 1872, Lafayette Benedict Mendel was born. An American biochemist, he made numerous discoveries about the value of vitamins and proteins, and he helped establish modern concepts of nutrition. A key discovery, that butterfat contained a growth-promoting factor necessary for development, soon known as fat-soluble vitamin A. And in 1884, Willis Johnson of Cincinnati, Ohio, received a patent for an egg beater. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lenner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It seems like that Brazil has had a perfect growing season until the last few days, and all of a sudden it's turned dry and warm.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that occurred. In a certain sense, this is a little bit deja vu with what occurred in the U.S. in 2012, where we were getting along okay early in the season, and all of a sudden, like someone flipped a light switch, things kind of turned around. But in the case of Brazil, we're not looking at nearly the kind of heat that we had in 2012 here in the States, and we are not as dry as we were back then. But there is a considerable amount of concern, though, building up across Brazil's crop country right now because of the drying bias. The early season soybean crop, of course, is being harvested. And last I saw, there was about 6% done. There's still a tremendous amount of crop still out there, and some of it will not be harvested until next month. So over these next few weeks, some of the more immature soybean crop would be vulnerable to an ongoing dry and warm bias pattern, and we could lose a little yield and certainly quality of the crop if it stays too dry. Now, the next 10 days are looking rather dry with no real meaningful precipitation across the majority of the production regions, and temperatures will be a little warmer bias. Probably see a lot of 80 and 90 degree, really upper 80 and 90 degree temperatures occurring on a regular basis. And of course, you can evaporate a half inch of moisture every day in that environment. That's not a good thing when you've got already a short to very short topsoil moisture situation. So the stress levels in Brazil will be on the increase as we go through the rest of this week and into next week as well. And some of the computer forecast models, and ourselves included, we believe that there will be some increase in precipitation after mid-month. As far as normal precipitation is concerned, that's probably not likely to occur. But if they can just get some timely rain to stop the drying or slow it down a little bit, some of these late-season crops will still come out looking okay. And we're also worried about the second-season corn crop, which is normally planted now, and there's going to be some delay in that planting process as well as the germination and emergence as long as it stays dry or biased like it is right now.
Let's turn our attention then to the U.S., where it is a winter wonderland once again with lots of snow across the region yesterday. What can you tell us about follow-up potential for warmer temperatures or no snow?
Well, we were just talking in the office earlier today about the fact that this ought to be about the peak of the cooling for the atmosphere, and if there's any good news out there, maybe that's it. Maybe the temperatures across the Midwest this week will be as cold as they're going to be. That doesn't mean we're not going to have more cold weather coming up over future weeks, but perhaps we can at least shed a little light that maybe it won't be as intensively cold. Anyway, their follow-up storm systems for the Midwest are not very impressive over the coming week to 10 days. I think we'll have smaller systems coming and going. It'll be almost a boring pattern, but boring would be okay.
Thank you much, Drew.
All right, you have a good day.
Drew Lenner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.